the usually empty Ashton Gate. It finished City 0, Barnsley 1. Did the sacking of Dean Holden this week get a response from the players? Did it? There we go. That's all I think of that. Joining me this evening are Mark, Les, and Ian. Let's before we go through the game, let me just have 20 seconds from you on the game. Just quick 20 seconds, right? So I'll come to you first, Mark. Yes, you're in first. Right, 20 seconds. Sum up this afternoon.
Yeah, endeavour, commitment, tackling, all in City's own half today when they actually offered zero going forward. A performance befitting a side hurtling towards relegation. Change needs to happen now.
Okay, Les, you next. 20 seconds.
I don't think I could put it any better than what Mark said, to be honest. I think he's spot on.
And you, Ian, your thoughts on that?
When we analyse teams, they can be attacking, defensive, good in midfield. We can't do anything well and seem technically poor to a man. Midfielders never run past the ball. First touch is a pass. Forwards are headless chickens. Mostly blind panic, abysmal team, and we can't even take a throw in properly.
No, I mean, that's the thing. That's the thing for me, you know. I mean, watching 50 years, as most of us have, some of us, even on some of the really dark days, you'd have a period in the game where you threaten. I mean, we were, and it's just gone on so long, isn't it? Is it 7 defeats in a row, including the cup game, 5 games now without a goal? Words fail to describe it. Some threads on OTIB have said worst performance in their lifetime. I think over the last 3 years, you know, your top 10 in 50 years are going to be in there. But it just seems to be going from bad to worse. I mean, my heart sort of dropped when I saw the lineup that had Pham in up front and Semenyo. Maybe nothing wrong against the kid. 6 players started who will have a contract come the 1st of July. Ian, let me come to you first on the lineup. Straightforward. Yeah, any surprises there for you?
Not really. I mean, it was nice to see Sessegnon in it, left wing back. I don't think he had a fantastic game, but he didn't have a stinker either. Taylor Moore did one really bad thing, but then defended reasonably well. But the overall shape of the team, you would say, was okay. But players still have to play well, and we didn't. They had a game plan, but they couldn't execute it. And to be honest, one thing that nobody seems to have picked up on is Jack Hunt. If there had been VAR at that game, he'd have been sent off in the first 2 minutes.
And what was that for?
Because he put his studs into the guy, to top of the guy's thigh. He wasn't.
That was Coley Woodrow, wasn't it? Yeah, like it was an early clatter, wasn't it? Yeah, that's what you'd say.
Well, they took Bentley threw the ball out to him high up the pitch, which is fair enough. Hunt tried to control it, and then the ball got away from him, and then he went in. A player came in. I don't know who it was. It might have been one of the other wing backs. He came in, and Hunt, if you look back at it, he caught him. It was certainly well above his knee, if not near his groin, with his studs. And I think if there had been VAR, they'd have been telling the referee to go over and have a look at the monitor, because that could have easily been a red.
Yeah, early doors on that. I mean, Les, the midfield, Viner, Palmer and Lansbury, when you've got people like Nagy, Anaj and Backinson on the bench, I think Ian said to me or Dave beforehand, you know, the only one who could really put a tackle in there was Viner, but another poor showing from Lansbury, wasn't it? What were your thoughts on the midfield, though, as it lined up from the start?
The issue I have with those two as a pairing is I don't think either of them are particularly mobile, and I don't think they get around the pitch well enough. I think Viner can play a defensive midfield role if he's got two runners in front of him. And Lansbury, obviously, he likes to get the ball. He likes to get his head up. And what was it? It must have been 6, 7, 8 times he's picked up the ball and hit it into space, straight out for a throw-in, no one there, straight through to their keeper. And I don't think those two will work well together as a pair. I just don't think they're mobile enough. And it's, you know, where are we now? We're in nearly March. We've still got absolutely no idea what we're doing with our midfield. Especially with Viner. Okay, he can do a job in there, I think, with two other people with him because he tends to sit. But we have got the options on the bench. We've got the Nadge, we've got Masengo, we've got Backinson, who I think has looked sharper than a couple of the others over the last few weeks. Yet we're still playing fundamentally a centre back in midfield, and it didn't work. It didn't work,
and we didn't need it. I mean, I was surprised, Les, that Masengo didn't get a run out. You know, to be perfectly honest, that, you know, he's shown a little bit of purpose in the last few games.
Yeah, well, it's a tombola, isn't it? It's picking it out of a hat to see what happens. Well, they're not doing that, but that's how it feels. They just got absolutely no idea. They haven't got a clue, and they haven't done all season. The moment Vyman got injured, what their best midfield is.
No.
They haven't got a clue, and that just showed itself again today.
Yeah, Mark, the front two, Diju and Semenyo, I thought, well, at least let's try. I thought they might have had Naki up front by himself and, you know, just playing it a 4-5-1 or a 4-1-4-1 or whatever. Were you surprised that Pham had a full 90 minutes walk around today, wasn't it, really?
Well, there was a way he was going, because he looks like he's ready. Well, he looks like he's in a departure lounge already. But I mean, they got no service. But what they made the mistake of, and Ian alluded to this on Radio Bristol, they were just the wrong side all of the time. How many offsides? I don't think they show that on the BBC website, but they were just constantly getting caught offside against a team that made a very high line. Mm. And what will happen with Moat and their Palmer? Basically, we're all over Henry Lansbury and Casey Palmer as soon as they got the ball. But that was their press. So all they had to do really was to play the ball wide, try and get the ball behind Stiles and Britton and onto their back three, because the back three were pushing high up the pitch. So they squeezed the space between the back three and the front three of Dyke, getting the ball to Britton and Stiles and getting the ball into the box quickly. And we had so many opportunities to get that ball into space to players, but we couldn't put more than three passes together before we messed up. Yeah. And, I mean, I don't really know the day, David, if it's worth going through the match. You know,
I'm not going to go through the whole game in too much detail.
It's like watching your life pass by. It's like a horror
show. It's like Groundhog Day every game. You know, awful. I mean, what was it?
But that's what they did.
45%.
Barnsley were just so well-drilled. They had a game plan. And they just kept going. And my friend, who's head of the Barnsley Supporters Club and Trust, said that we play 3-4-3, the midfield pair, they just try and stop you playing, Palmer and Moat. And what we're doing, we're super fit under Ismail. And they just kept going to the end. Even at the end, they were still going forward and leaving space at the back. But they were more than enough to beat us 1-0. I mean, really, it was a very comfortable 1-0 for them. Very comfortable. Yeah. They were just had nothing up front to put the ball in the net. I mean, that big Daryl Dyke. I mean, he was on loan from Orlando City. I mean, you can get bargains there, can't you?
Ian, I mean, first half, I mean, we had, I've written down hardly anything for us, and I won't even bother going through it. I think Palmer did a good through ball to Semenyo, whose poor touch let him down, just like he did in, I think, the previous home game when put through. One of their guys, after Taylor Moore made his only mistake, he blasted that over Hellick on 14 minutes. But the first half, was City lucky to go in 0-0, would you say, Ian? Or was 0-0 a fair balance? Yeah, we haven't threatened, but they'd have more, haven't they, really?
No, Barnsley should have been in front. I mean, Taylor Moore scuffed that ball and all Hellick had to do was kick it in the net. And then Taylor, I forgot, that was his second, that was a real Rick. His other Rick was when he tried to play a crossfield pass and hit it straight to a Barnsley player and they were on the break. Interesting, I just seen a quote come up via the Bristol Live, and it's from Thomas Callas. And it says, "The less I say on social media, the better. What I'm seeing on there at times is just ridiculous. I'm trying to put the best version of myself on the pitch. The results are just not right. It's not just in 1 month that we've become shit players." I don't think Callas, you could criticise him too much apart from his passing and his distribution, which I think on the whole for an £8 million player is poor. But I think Barnsley should have been in front. I think they should have won by more goals, let's face it. The goal they scored was, I mean, God knows, I think every player in the team got a touch on that at one point. But I think we could have played until midnight and not scored a goal. And I don't think, you know, there's an old saying in business that I use a lot, you never solve a problem with the thinking that created it.
No,
and the thinking that created our current run was Holden, Simpson, and Downing.
And Downing. And so you've not really lanced the boil. Yeah,
no,
and Pat
Mountain
thrown it there as well. Yeah, you've just prolonged it.
And I mean, when I hear Steve Lansdowne say, well, they'll have to buy into our culture, then he says the academy. And I thought, yeah, fine, tick. The community. We like helping the community. Yeah, big tick there, Steve. Well done. And our recruitment. And I went, what?
Well, let's come on to Steve's interview, because that's two interviews in a week from the owner, and nothing, not a peep out of in absentia John Lansdowne and Mr. Ashton, who we're all giving unfair hard time to, according to Lansdowne. I mean, Les, second half. Let's look at the goal. I mean, Viner lost out in midfield on 47 minutes. Not for the first time. He does get robbed in the middle quite a lot. I remember a few times against Sheffield and in the last and the games prior to that. And then Britton, one of their blokes, 10 minutes before the goal, he went on a run before putting in a shot that Dan Bentley was well positioned to save. But the goal, when it came, I mean, what a mess it was. Some people have been having a go at Dan Bentley about it. But how did you see the goal, Les?
Well, I think you've got to give Barnsley a bit of credit, because if you look at their set pieces, they had two in the first half and that one, they're good balls into the box. Do you know what I mean? And I can't remember the last time that we looked a threat in any way, shape or form from a corner kick. And, you know, it's just one. I think we're getting a. I think there's a bit of, you know, stick being given to the players for the goal and that. But I think you need to be realistic. The ball's bouncing around. Players were throwing their bodies on the lines. It could have gone anywhere. The one critique I have is that the person at the back post lost their man. And that's what's cost us. It was just one of those scrappy goals. Some 9 times out of 10, it hits a player and bounces out for a throw and gets smashed up the pitch. But I guess it could come down again to positioning from the original corner. I mean, Pham doesn't seem to be anywhere near his position, the position that he usually takes up at that near post. So maybe that could have avoided it. But it was just a scrappy goal and one of those ones that can happen when you don't clear your lines.
Yeah. Mark, the substitutions, I mean, it's all a bit irrelevant, really, because, you know, I'm not even going to go through them in detail, but Pato came on and he's made an apology of a performance the last two occasions he's come out. And he had a free kick, which was akin to the one that I think Jack Hunt put in one game where it just sailed over. And I think Osborne, doing the commentary of Robins TV, said, not a bad ball. It was totally wasteful. I like Italian Dave's comment on OTIB. It was shit. I mean, look, let's make no bones about that. So the final whistle, I mean, we didn't even raise ourselves going into the final stages of the game and everybody trudged off. I don't know how quickly the music was switched off like it was on Tuesday night. But here we are. We find ourselves now 15th in the league and closer to the bottom and the top. And if you look at QPR putting together runs, Forest could be above us in midweek. It's just, you know, there's only one word to describe it, and that's Shville at the end of the day. And there doesn't seem to be any end to it, because the next two games away at Borough and at Swansea, I know that Swans lost 4-1, but it is getting a crisis point, Ian, isn't it? Yeah, and let's come on to the interview now with Mr. Lansdowne. But we are at crisis point now, aren't we? Just by nature of the performance, yeah?
Yeah, and this isn't something this happened this week. I mean, this has been going on now for months. The performances haven't been there. The performances, let's be honest, the performances haven't been there since the start of the season. And there's a few games that we won earlier on where we were very, very lucky and we could have easily lost. And I'll give you the first one of the season, 1-0 up after 20 seconds, could have easily gone in 3 or 4-1 down at halftime. The commentary got strong in the last 15, 20 minutes and came out 2-1 winners. That's a classic example. I could name, you know, Forest away, lots of others.
Yeah, so, Stoke's probably the only game where we put in a performance. I think everybody would agree.
Yeah, you come back to it, you've got to look at certain decisions and think, why did we do that? So why did we appoint Dean Holden? Okay, why, when we needed a left back, did we sign a central midfield player who'd started 15 games in 3 years?
And looks totally unfit. And looks totally unfit, doesn't he?
Yeah. So why would anyone in their right mind sanction Lansbury and not the left back? And we're told John Lansdowne.
And Lansbury wouldn't have been cheap. Lansbury wouldn't have been cheap either, would he?
No, but it seems to me that everything we want to do is short term, and we need to know why, because it looks like we're clearing the decks. It looks, I mean, come June the 1st, we'll have 12 senior pros outfield players under contract. Yeah. That's all. Now, at the moment, our squad is 38. I mean, in fairness, that includes 8 lads who've never started a game for the first team, the academy players that we had to bring in with the injury crisis. We've got 17 players injured, 7 of whom are out for the season.
Yeah.
So it looks to me like we're trying to get to June, and they just then
July,
say somebody,
July the 1st actually is the witching hour. July the 1st.
Is it all right?
All contracts go to the end of June. Yeah, but it doesn't matter. It's a month. Right. Doesn't make any difference.
It doesn't make any difference. I mean, so why are we doing that? And I haven't heard an explanation that justifies what we're doing and why we're doing it. And the other side of that is, why would any of the players out there that are going to be out of contract in a few months' time put their body on the line for Bristol City? And I'm not seeing a huge, what I call, lack of effort. I am seeing a real lack of application and lack of talent. And I don't know if that's down to effort or they're just not very good. But either way, you've got to blame recruitment. And you've got to look at strategy. Why are we doing that? Why didn't we get a left back?
Well, that's when we can ask that question until we're blue in the face, and we'll never get an answer. I mean, Les, this week, as I say, Lansdowne has been the spokesperson. Yeah, John Lansdowne is not in the country. Steve, I think, is in Guernsey rather than being further afield than that. Mark Ashton, totally silent. What should we read into that before we get into the content of the Lansdowne interview? But what should we read into the lack of any words from those two thus far?
Well, I mean, if Lansdowne's abroad, like people are saying, then you can understand why he's not doing any interviews. There could be two reasons. The first one is Lansdowne's trying to protect him. He knows he's getting a lot of stick. He made it clear in the interview that he reads what people are saying, and he's trying to almost shield him from any, you know, potential abuse. And the second reason is the obvious one, which is Ashton spending every minute of every day trying to get us a new manager. From what I could tell from the interview, you know, we haven't got anyone lined up. We haven't got a Paul Cook, who we interviewed in the summer, ready to go and ready to bring his assistants. This seems to me like it's going to be quite a process that really does start from the very beginning. So it could be that Ashton's spending his time going through and starting this process off, and that's going to be a long process.
Well, a rigorous and vigorous process. I mean, what do you think? What do you think, Mark?
Bit of breaking news, Dave. That Liam Walsh is going to play for the under 23s on Tuesday.
Oh, and somebody said he'll probably do his hamstring then. That's interesting. I mean, again, Mark, let's talk about injuries again before we get into the interview. I mean, Joe Williams, again, public statement from him about how is his injury being misdiagnosed? I mean, is this what the hell's all that about?
Well, they found that a scan's revealed another, or something revealed another injury that wasn't noticed or something like that, and he's getting it looked at properly by a specialist. And why was it missed? But why the hell was he played in two games against Cardiff, and was it Cardiff and Sheffield United? I mean,
what he actually said is they've got to the root cause of the injury, and I can understand that, because I was getting treatment for a problem in my neck at one time, and it was nothing to do with my neck. It was the lower part of my back that was causing it. But that was, I can understand it, but the amount of time the kid's been injured, you'd have think somebody else would have understood it, wouldn't you? Because one of his injuries, of his hamstring, he got that when he was actually in rehab for the thigh injury he got at the start. So is this, he got sent off to this scan to do with his hamstring. So is it his hamstring? Is it his glutes? Is it his ear roll? What is it? You know, because, I mean, the kid must be absolutely cheesed off that this hadn't been picked up sooner. Must be.
Well, why did he play twice in a week? Why did he play twice in a week? in a cup game.
Yeah, that's why.
Yes, the glory's there. Chance to get the quarterfinal, brilliant. That game ain't going to affect Holding his job. This guy's been out for 8 months, however long it is, and you're expecting him in the centre midfield. You know how he plays to put all that at risk. And the club or Holden and management staff have got themselves solely to blame for that. I couldn't believe it when he was playing against Sheffield United. This is our big signing in the summer, who's been out for months. He needs to be built in slowly.
You could have brought him on for 20 minutes, couldn't you?
Exactly.
Towards the end, to start off.
They didn't play Alfie Mawson against Millwall for the same that reason, didn't they? That we thought, well, great, don't play Alfie Mawson against Millwall. Bring him back for the following game. You know, he's fresh, a guy who's been out for a long time, obviously before he injured himself again. So that was good thinking. But I mean, what the hell are they thinking? It's just like endless crass stupidity with the club. One stupid decision after the other. And yeah. I mean, going on to the interview, we're the club that plans forward. We've got all these shiny toys and we do everything properly. Well, we're the envy of the football world.
That's right. I mean, God, well, you know, the envy of the football world in certain areas, except everything that's on the pitch. I mean, Dave, he's just dipping in and out of the programme tonight. He's put on there that, you know, the most ill-judged comment in all of this was Ashton saying to the guy on Sky the night of the Norwich match, because it all seems to have gone really bad since then, about fans about not offering players contracts, and then on 20 men saying we've offered fam the best contract that is ever out there, you know. And if that, I didn't, it might have been the other way around, but if there was ever something that was going to hack off the players, yeah, maybe that was it. But let's get back to the this interview that came up on Pravda TV. First thing I would pick up on here is when he talked about Simpson and Dowling. Yeah, we're very happy that they decided to stay on and what have you. Very happy. All I can say is to that, because, you know, they're not going to hand their notice in. They're not going to hand their notice in and walk out of a job. And then it took me back to the Sean O'Driscoll days when I heard, I think it was Simpson or Downing before the game, saying, you know, we got to forget about league places and points. We're looking for a performance. Well, your league places have gone down. You got nil points and you couldn't even motivate them into a performance. But Ian, when Steve Lansdowne said, we're going to bring in somebody that isn't going to destroy what we've put in place. And again, as somebody put on OTIB, you can't destroy the training ground, you can't destroy the academy and everything like that, but you could destroy the recruitment setup, because that's part of the root problem, isn't it?
Yeah. The only little bit of light I can see at the end of the tunnel is that we should have, from what Simpson has said and what Holden said, we should have Baker, De Silva, Walsh, Jenner, Nurse, Watkins and O'Dowda back in March. Yeah. Okay, so that's perhaps a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. In terms of the recruitment setup, it doesn't work. You know, I mean, Dave did an absolutely brilliant piece, Dave Fevs, about the players that we've signed, what's happened to them, and, if you will, Mark Ashton's successes, and which, in fairness to Lee Johnson, those two could, certainly one of them is 100% down to him. The second one is probably down to him. The ones I'm talking about are Josh Brownhill and Adam Webster. Now, if you look at some of the other players that we've signed that have either moved on or not moved on, the recruitment wants a shake-up. You know, my own view is that you should take Mark Ashton out and all the people below him. So the fitness and conditioning coach, the medical team,
and you can't do any of that. You can't do any of that until the end of the season. You can't really.
You could take Mark Ashton out now and give John Lansdowne the job. I mean, I don't see why we need two of them when, you know, you've got things like Mark Kelly, who runs the stadium so brilliantly.
And you've got a good, who does the finances is pretty good as well, to be fair.
You know, you can take it out piecemeal. Now, I can understand why Steve Lansdowne, I mean, the bloke lives in Guernsey. He's well past retirement age, with great respect to him. And he doesn't want the day-to-day involvement. I totally and 100% get it. And it's that old thing my dad used to say about when he wanted me to do anything and I didn't want to know it. He used to say, hang on, I don't keep dogs and bark myself. Go out and do it. And, you know, so Steve Lansdowne's thinking, well, hang on a minute, I'm paying this bloke £500,000 a year, and I've got to go in and do it. Now, I would hope, like Les said, that Mark Ashton is spending every minute of every day bringing a manager in, because the process could be, with the people that are out of work, could be done in a week.
Well, we know that. I mean, exactly. But
you're in recruitment, Dave.
Yeah, all we've heard at the moment, well, I'll tell you what the solution, well, not the solution, but right, all we've heard is the bleating about, well, it might be difficult to do interviews because of COVID and everything like that. And as somebody put on OTIB earlier today, that hasn't stopped Bournemouth getting hold of Thierry Henry and getting him over from Canada. But I think we're in such a critical situation that if this was a business, and you've been in this situation, Ian, when you've been put in there, if this was a business, right, you would bring in an interim and you would over recruit and you'd bring in somebody to sort out the short term problem. Yeah, to sort it out now. And there's loud leases.
You don't start with the cleaners, Dave. No, that's the thing.
Loud Lisa on here has said, Paul Simpson has said, I hope the managerial situation is resolved as quickly as possible for everyone. And what he really means is so I can get the out of here. But there we go. You can tell I've been enjoying playing this button, can't you? I mean, were you put off, Mark, when you heard him say, oh, it's going to be a long process? You know, we need to do this sort of, you know, be rigorous and vigorous. He didn't use the words, but by implication, you know, I'm thinking on what they've said, 4 weeks, not 4 days, which is what Ian's saying. What do you say, Mark?
Well, they've got all these grand ideas, but there's just no ruthlessness there, is there? I mean, it's like, you know, Red Adair was brought in to, you know, to for big oil rigs being ablaze, and Sitter ablaze at the moment, and there's no, you know, they're quite happy to sit there while it all burns down rather than do something. That's what we're watching it all burn down. We're shooting down the league, and we'll be in the relegation zone in the next few weeks, and they're quite happy to go through a softly recruitment process where nice Bristol City do everything properly. Remember when Nottingham Forest wanted to get a new manager in, they got Chris Hughton in 24 hours. I'm not saying we should get Chris Hughton in. I'm just saying they've done all the work behind the scenes because they know that he needed to be replaced. We're not like that. We seem to be happy to plod along, and this goes right throughout the club. And we got, I don't think the four of us or the fans have got any trust in Mark Ashton or Steve None. Lansdowne to recruit and make a good appointment.
Well, Ian and I were talking about this at lunchtime, because look, this isn't like a normal recruitment where you've got somebody's CV. What these blokes have done, anybody on that shortlist, it's there in the public domain, who they've bought, who they've sold, what their win percentage is and everything like that. They can't lie on their CV. What you get down to is when you recruit a football manager, is it does come down to personality, you know. And if Paul Cook had his interview last time and they didn't like him for whatever reason, because he was a little bit brash as a scout, they're not going to take him. Now Steve Lansdowne is leaving it to his son or Mark, and if his son is in Bermuda, then he isn't going to be physically coming back. But if he's leaving it to Ashton, is Ashton going to give him a short list of four? Because that's who Lansdowne should personally meet with four, and then there might be another four that Lansdowne would say, why isn't Paul Cook on the shortlist? But then on the four, there might be somebody like Ryan Lowe who impresses or something like that. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that, you know, Steve Lansdowne is going to be more hands-on this time. And I'll be honest, I thought, you know, he came across quite well on that talk thing yesterday, even if none of the questions were of a Jeff Twentyman standard in terms of probing. But do you think they should get a short-term managerial fix, like an interim in now, to sort it out? Or as Dave Fevs has said, nobody would argue if Tuesday or Monday night they announce Paul Cook is coming in with two new assistants. What do you say, Les? Or go for Paul Cook?
Look at the available talent who are currently unemployed. You've got Eddie Howe, you've got Paul Cook, you've got Nigel Pearson, you've got David Wagner, who was obviously heavily linked with Bournemouth but doesn't seem to be going there. He's got promotion to the Premier League. Why do we need an interim appointment? If there was no talent out there, then yeah, I could see that. I could argue that and wait till the summer. But there's so much quality out there that we don't need to do that. And the problem is, and this is the issue with Ashton doing the first round of interviews, I think we'll probably bypass them, or I think Ashton will probably bypass them, and he'll focus more on one of the Cowley, Danny Cowley, whatever his name is, Michael Appleton, an up-and-coming lower league, League One manager, because that's the way Ashton operates. So this idea of an interim manager, I think ultimately it could be, and then we'll go for Appleton in the summer. But that's the route I could see us going down.
Well, my view on Appleton was that if he wasn't tarnished with the Ashton brush, then I read a good article on him in his time at Oxford, and he did a reasonable job there. But why would we go out and pay compensation for a bloke who's just signed he's 3.5 years into a 4-year contract, 1 and 6 months into a 4-year contract, when there is talent that's out there? You could bring an interim. Birmingham City did that 4 years ago when they brought in Harry Redknapp for the last 8 games with Steve Cotterill alongside him. And it all went tits up after that because Harry got fired 6 games into the new season. But if you go in and bring an interim, and I always say this to clients when I'm helping them recruit people to sort out a fix, you over-recruit. And if you look abroad, this isn't fanciful. But currently out of work, right? Rafa Benitez, right? Getting Rafa to help them stay up would be the equivalent, well, probably even better than Pat Lam. He's out of work at the moment. I wouldn't want to see Mark Hughes come in, if I'm honest, because, you know, he's old money. Eddie Howe, you either give it to him permanently, you don't give it to him for 6 months. Marco Silva, I got John Katsouris to thank for giving me this list off here. Marco Silva, is he going to motivate them? Leonardo, you're then into the foreign guys. Then you get out-of-work managers, championship-type people. You get Nigel Pearson. Would Nigel Pearson... Ian, would you say Nigel Pearson, if they said to Nigel, look, we'll give you... We're not going to give you the full-time job, but keep us in the division 15... Or is he in a job in Holland? What do you say to Nigel Pearson?
Well, I don't understand why you're looking at people in League One and League Two and you're looking at interims at all. They're, like Les said, there are enough good people out of work. So offer them, I mean, you can say to somebody, do you want to be manager of a championship club with a multi-billionaire owner and a brand spanking new training ground and football club? How many people are going to turn that down? So we don't need to beg people or oversell it. And we certainly don't need a bloke that is had a certain amount of success in League One. If you're going to do that, you may as well go and get Cots back. So, I don't.
But Ian, you've been in business. If you've been in business, you haven't been an MD, but take a situation. You're an MD, right? You're the MD, and your operations and you're recruiting. You've got a site director and you've got the manufacturing director. So you say to the site director, look, sort out your manufacturing director's job and then I'll see the last three. And then you interview them and then the manufacturing director says, look, the money's good. But he says, quite honestly, Ian, I can't work for your site director. You know, I mean, I'd love to come and work for your company, but I think the guy's an arse at the end of the day. And then what are you going to do? And if you think, well, actually, he is a bit of an ass. What does Lansdowne do? You know, what do you do in that situation?
No, I mean that identifies a failing in you or your structure or your process. If you're thinking, well, actually, yeah, he is a bit of an ass, then why is he there? So Steve Lansdowne appointed his son as chairman. He appointed Mark Ashton.
He's got his brother-in-law who was sat in the director's box with him today,
That gives them, and he said to him, right, you're running the club on a day-to-day basis. Here's your budget. You're only allowed to spend X million, and I'll sign off all the major deals, which is what he's more or less alluded to in his interviews. So he sounds like he's got faith in Mark Ashton. Now, he then talks about, well, I read forums and I do this and do that. So he must know, unless he's got tin ears, he must know that Mark Ashton is about as popular as, I don't know, as Denzel Washington at the Ku Klux Klan rally.
as COVID. He's very popular as COVID at the moment.
Yeah,
you know, he's just not popular with the fans. They don't like him. And Steve leapt to his defence on Jeff 20 minutes. And people don't realise how much Mark does and how hard he works. The number of times I've fired people in my life, and I've given him a look. I know you're working really hard, but there's always a but coming, but it's just not working out. It's not you, it's me. Right? That kind of conversation. I've done that so many times. And it is a cop out, because what you're actually saying is, look, you're not very good at your job. But that's a difficult thing to say to people. But this is football. And Mark Ashton would go with a whacking great payoff. And I don't think you can justify. You could say to him, look, Mark, you know, you've had all this money for all these years. We've been losing 10 million a year, which I've been making up, you know, most years. I mean, all right, we made 10 million 1 year, but it was 1 year out of about 10 or 12. We've been losing all this money. So I'm ever so sorry, but you've had a bit like with Lee Johnson, you've had more than a fair crack of the whip, because Lee lost 8 games on the trot. Steve Lansdowne gave him a brand spanking new 4-year contract.
Yes, he did.
So let's have that note. So when we're starting to say, well, whose fault? He said last night, I take the blame because I'm, you know, the buck stops with me. Fine. Do something about it, but do something different. Don't keep doing the same thing and expecting something miraculously to happen. And that is the point. And I don't think Nigel Pearson would be wanted down there, because he's a bit like Cots. He answers back.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. If you look at the gobby managers, you know, Cottrell did, probably Gary Johnson did in his own way as well. And then if you go back to other managers that have been a little bit edgy, a little bit difficult to manage, Joe Jordan, yeah, he's another one.
Yeah, he was a personality. Him,
but, you know, is the only manager, there's probably only two managers that would placate people at the moment, and they're right in the middle, and that would be Paul Cook. Yeah, nobody would argue if he got the job and started before next Saturday. But then, and another one that might fall into that bracket is Alex Neil. But as a couple of people have said on the message board on here, a Pearson and maybe Eddie Howe, they're probably not going to come here, are they? Because they won't want to operate.
Well, I'll tell you, this is really groundbreaking, Dave, but why don't we ask them and then we'll know?
Well, exactly, maybe.
You know, I mean, all this stuff about, oh, they wouldn't want to. Out of 4.5, do you know? These people, oh, no, Eddie, I don't want to come here. How do you know? Do you know him? Have you asked him?
He's going to get transparent with us and say who's being into it. Because if a manager's
Hang on. If he's, 1 minute he's going to Celtic, that was the first club that came up. Well, Neil Lennon's just won 6 games on the spin there, so that ain't going to happen. The next thing, he's going to Palace. I could see that more because Hodgson's getting older and he's not having a great season, but he ain't down in the bottom 3 either. So you sit there and think, well, I could see that. But if you're offered a job now, and football management, it's very easy to become yesterday's man. I mean, Mick McCarthy applied for our job in the summer, didn't even get an interview. Look what he's done at Cardiff. When he took over at Cardiff, they were 7 points behind us. Now they're 7 points above us.
Yeah.
And I must admit, I wouldn't have been a massive fan of Mick McCarthy. But when you look at his CV and what he's done, he's obviously made a difference. So, you know, all right, if we go to Eddie Howe and he says, no, thanks, I'm not doing anything for a year. Fine, goodbye, Eddie. Right, who do we want next? Nigel Pearson. No, I'm happy where I am, wherever that is. I mean, you're saying he's working in Holland. I'm not sure.
He's unemployed.
And this thing about...
He was in Belgium a couple of jobs ago. Yeah,
you've got to be... And all this thing about, oh, well, you know, you've got to be loyal to your managers. And what do you mean? Like unsuccessful teams like Chelsea and Watford. How did it
work out for them? They spat out
Frank Lampard, and in his own way, you know, Abramovich, he probably looked up, said, oh, I need to change, bang. And the money's no issue when it comes to paying people off like that. And that's the thing. That's the thing that Lansdowne, he's not probably as rich as Abramovich is, but if he had to pay off Mark Ashton with a year's salary, and it got a load of the grief away, he'd probably do that. Yeah, because
he said look, something interesting. No, but
you don't pay him a year.
Sorry, Mark. What were you gonna say, Mark?
He said we got a bit of the thing he did say, just a little thing in his interview, was we got a bit of flexibility with FFP, which is like saying that I could put money in, although he won't be able to put it into next season. So he could pay, you know, he could play for it, put the money down for a new manager. And put a sizable wage in there, you know, with a bonus for keeping us up now going forward.
You don't need to pay these people off in one bump. Nobody does that anymore, or not very many do. They just go on paying until they get another job. Yeah. So it's not a question of if I sack him tomorrow, I got to write a check for 600,000 because you won't.
Yeah.
No. I meant the new man coming in. He could afford it. There's some.
Well, you could say to the new bloke, tell you what, Eddie, if you get us in the Premier League, you get £5 million. How's that sound?
Yeah,
when you look at Eddie Howe and you look at what we've got now, which we didn't have previously, the assistants Dowling and Simpson, they're going to go. Okay.
Yeah.
So you could say to Eddie Howe, right, Eddie, you can. Well, we want you to come.
He'd probably bring Jason Tindall, wouldn't he? He'd probably bring Jason Tindall.
He could say to him, you can bring in two or three assistants. We'll get rid of Pat Mountain. We'll get rid of Cisse. You can bring in your own goalkeeping coach. You can bring in your own couple of other coaches. If you work with a particular group of physios, we'll get rid of them in the summer. And you can bring your own physios in as well. That might tempt someone like Howard. If you go back to previous appointments, a lot of the jobs have been, you need to work with what we've already got.
Yeah, now, good point.
One of the benefits of this appointment is, I think whoever comes in is going to be able to bring a number of people with them. And that might be a carrot for someone like Howe, who, you know, he'll know that we'll have money to spend on players. There's never been an issue of Lansdowne, like I said, about the financial fair play. The only issue I see with Howe is, are we a big enough club? And two, can he work in a system where Mark Ashton does all the recruitment? What Ashton should say to him is, yes, I'm in charge of recruitment, but we're actually going to change this. And we're going to change it for you, so you can have a bigger role in this process. We need to adapt if we're going to progress and if we want to get a big manager in.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just empty words. And I mean, for the last few years, it's just been a load of empty rhetoric. City have got all these big ideas. We've got great plans, but we don't deliver at all. It's shocking.
No, you're right. I mean, I think the thing is, you know, that bit about financial fair play leeway, and it comes back to what we've been saying, that there seems to be a method in not offering players contracts. I mean, one of the things I got from the interview, Ian and I have been saying, he's going to sell the football club part of it. I don't think he is. I mean, he's still got a commitment here and he didn't seem happy with what was going on. But the FFP leeway, to me, is saying that in the summer, right, we are going to be able to go out there and the new manager is going to be able to go out there, and whilst we might pay transfer fees, significant big transfer fees, I think there's going to be a hell of a lot of players that are better than the Patos of this world, right? They're going to be out of contract and we can give them decent wages, yeah, and buy them that way, just like whoever's got Pham. You know, he can pay Pham double what we were giving him because they haven't had to pay Pham, they haven't had to pay £1.5 million to get Pham on board.
On the flip side, I mean, you look at a team like Barnsley today, I mean, renowned in the Championship, we're paying peanuts. And they're recruiting from the MSL, a loanee from Norwich City, that Morrison I never heard of in a month of Sundays. But the commitment and the energy from that team, they probably won't get in the playoffs, but they're looking up. And they look so much better than us, and you know, for a team that costs peanuts, but they can bring players.
Well, that's where,
like your John Stones and your Mason Holgates. I mean, even Mawson played for them briefly, didn't they?
Yeah.
I mean, they polish rough diamonds, don't they?
That's where it comes down to the players, though, because again, we seem to be letting them off scot free. Because as a couple of people have said on here, you know, we've forced six shots on target in the last five games or something like that. And why aren't they stepping up to the plate in their eyes? You know, because sometimes if you're a player, you know, and I haven't played at a high level, but you can sort of collectively say, look, we're just going to go out and we're going to play for ourselves and our professional pride. They didn't appear to be playing with any pride in the shirt, Ian, today, did they? Despite what Callas is saying on his social media.
I think they were trying, and that worries me more than anything. If they're not trying, you just get a bloke in who's going to frighten them to death or kick them or do whatever you got to do to these guys, bribe them, and you can get them going. But I think they were all trying, and they were dreadful. And you know, you get a really good player, even when they don't try, they can trap a ball just out of professional pride.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I mean, the number of times today I saw the ball just get away from people. You know, try and touch it and it go out of play. Mm-hmm. Or the ball would drop to Taylor Moore or Callas and they'd lump it and it goes straight to a Barnsley player. And I just looked.
Well,
at
is that
and
them
thought,
playing
the
to instruction? Is that them playing to instruction or a total? Well,
I don't think, however,
Dave,
however bad the coaches are, they're not going to instruct them to kick the ball to the opposition. You know, I mean, I'll give Simpson and Damien that much credit. No, I think, I mean, Simpson said tonight that he hopes the management situation sorted out as quickly as possible for all concerned. So he knows he's at it. I mean, these guys read social media. They know what's going on. And they're probably looking over their shoulder thinking, well, OK, I'll get paid for the next year with a bit of luck. And during that time, I'll get a job coaching the under-23s at somewhere closer to where I live. Yeah. So, you know, I don't really think that. But all this started, it all goes back to Steve Lansdowne because he employed Dean Oldham. Or Mark Ashton and Junior Lansdowne. He employed Dean Oldham, who shouldn't have even got an interview with his CV, never mind a job. Same applied to Lee Johnson.
Yeah.
And if you're going to keep appointing people like that, then I'm sorry, but if you keep doing the same thing over and over again, expect a different result, that's the first sign of insanity.
Yeah.
And so let's go out and get somebody who's been there, seen it, done it, got the T-shirt. And if he fails, you can say, hey, hang on, we took on a bloke with all the experience. Look what he's done. He's got 8 promotions on his CV. He's got so-and-so. He won the FA Cup. Whatever he's done.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if people talk about Warnock and, oh, my God, the guy has got to have something that
to
is
achieve what
not
he's
clearly
achieved.
Visible.
Yeah, it's
of course he has. What's
it's
he
stardust.
Got?
It's stardust. And you
eight,
can't put your finger
eight,
on
nine,
that.
8-9 promotions and always with poor, not poor teams, not big name clubs. Clubs like ours.
Yeah.
And he's always
done
it.
Sorry, go on, Les. What were you saying?
Do you think some of this goes back? Mark. Steve Lansdowne's scared of getting it wrong because he still feels responsible for getting it wrong with Steve Coppell. Although we think, I remember you said this to me at the time, David, that he didn't do his due diligence on Coppell because there was probably something going wrong at Reading before he came to
Steve
City.
Steve Coppell, you mean?
Yeah. When Steve Coppell came
he
in.
He won't give Steve Coppell, Mark,
away.
He
went on holiday, didn't
Mark,
he?
Mark, he won't give Steve Coppell a second thought, right? It was, I made a mistake again, move on. And he'll be thinking, oh, wasn't it great under Gary Johnson? And in fairness to Johnson, he got us promoted and got us to a playoff final. Nobody else has done that. And I was no fan, particularly towards the end.
Mm.
But what else have we achieved? Honestly, in the Championship, we haven't got to a playoff.
Well, all we were doing is, I mean, Johnson was living off that League Cup semi-final, wasn't he, for the last two and a half seasons. You know, that was what we were living off. You know, flirting with the playoffs only to fall away, that's no good. I mean, lots of managers could do that and spend a lot less money. Didn't they? Yeah. And they have done.
Could we do any worse, right, than just saying to Simpson and Downing, okay, guys, look, you didn't have the desired effect because they're not really part of the Bristol City fabric. They came here because they'd have lost their jobs at the FA in the summer, reading on an article that I picked up on. And we say, look, guys, thanks, and we'll pay you your month's notice or whatever we have to, and then get – and this is just short-term to get us through – a couple of weeks or however long it's going to take to do the recruitment process, because we can wish for something within. Hey, no,
you hope 2 weeks.
No, I'm not saying Dave Febb's the manager or anything like that, but they could do no worse. Get rid of those two guys and say to Tins, help us out, because he's got a passion for the club, Tinian. And if they couldn't raise their game, because these two that were in charge today, it's the same old stuff from them. Would you think that would be a totally retrograde step to say, look, the process is going to take 3 weeks, right? We didn't get the response we expected from Simpson and Dowding. So, Brian, we're putting you in charge. Simpson and Dowding, go off, back up to the Midlands or wherever it is you go, and thanks for your service, but you were part of the problem. Brian, help, just steady the ship for three weeks, three games. No, you say no, Les.
Well, the problem is, I think that the problems that the players have is so ingrained that if Tinian comes in, I don't think it's going to change anything. I think we need someone with real tactical acumen who can drill the players into a real philosophy and identity on the pitch. Otherwise, we're just going to carry on the same downward spiral. If Tinian comes in, I don't think he's going to just lift the players from his presence and his love of Bristol City. We saw today, and against Cardiff and Watford and Reading, that these players are completely lost their confidence and they have no idea about tactical shape, philosophy and identity. So we need to get someone in as quickly as possible with
those proven skills. All right. Mark, Ian, sorry, I'll come to you after. I'll ask you the question as well, Mark, but Ian first. I mean, if they got Paul Cook in, right, has he got an identity that he can instill in the team that is fundamentally different to what we've got, or it would be a 3-5-2 and he just drill them better? Because if Paul Cook came in Monday afternoon, he ain't going to change things, is he, for Tuesday? Or is he? What do you think? Ian, first.
Well, if there was no point in changing the manager, then nobody would do it. The unfortunate thing is, it isn't the summer. You can't get rid of 12 players and sign another 12. The only players you can sign now are free agents.
Who won't be fit? Look at Lansbury, not fit.
Well, and you see how well that's gone with Lansbury, which I said at the time, I could not fathom out that signing at all. But anyway, leaving that to one side, has he got an identity he plays with? Yes. Is he? I think he's a strong, likeable Scouser, big, tough. Well, I think he's a tough character. I don't think he stands any messing. He's got a good record as a manager. He's made his bones in Ireland. I mean, he ran Sligo, won two Irish Cup finals with him. And I know the Irish League isn't the strongest league in the world before somebody says it, but he's won a couple of pots. He's won titles and he's won promotions. And once again, he's done it. He hasn't done it with, you know, Man City or Aston Villa. He's done it with clubs that are far worse than we are. So my own view is, yeah, he'd be fine for me. I've mentioned the three over and over again that are all unemployed that should be on board by now. But I think you've got to say, if that guy, say you appointed Pearson or Cook, and they came to you and said, hang on, Steve, this recruitment ain't going to work, mate. This setup will not work. Then you've got to listen to them because they've been there, seen it and done it. And then we have to get someone in, whatever happens, and this needs to happen now, not in the summer. We need to get someone in, independent, to have a look at our whole fitness, conditioning, medical setup. Because there isn't, as far as I'm aware, there isn't another team in the country that has got an injury problem like us. Players out injured. Come off it.
Yeah. No, it's not right. I mean, Mark, how would you feel if Danny Cowley was announced? I mean, that would just be wouldn't it? If he was.
The funny thing with Cowley is, I think my sister told me about this. Lisa, who's listening in on this pod, him and his brother Nicky, they were meant to be given. They were going to be allowed to carry on at Huddersfield, and were sort of told that towards the end of the season that they'd be given some money to spend, and then the board seemed to renege on that. But I just want to go back to Paul Cook because I mean he had a +1 goal difference still, and they were 23rd last season. I mean, it was only because of the 12-point deduction, but they came very close to staying up. They played Fulham on the last day, I think, and drew. When they needed to win, and they would have stayed up on goal difference and put Barnsley down if they'd have won that game. So I mean, he picked a club off the floor in Wigan and you know had a good run of results and I think including beating Brentford away and you know was very close to staying up. So I think he'd be a good addition. Not sure about Nicky and Danny. I really think like him and the likes of Eddie Howe would prefer a pre-season. And you know they want a run
into a slow run up into the job where they can bring, you know, they've got some money to spend on players and time to look at their contacts and formulate a plan. I just don't think they're the right managers for a crisis. I think you're looking more at Pearson and Paul Cook because they're tougher.
What's the compelling reason, the compelling football and business logic behind interviewing the Cowleys?
None. Absolutely none.
Yeah.
Why are they?
That's my point.
Why
are they even in the conversation? It's like
guys are answering the question.
And they start talking. You know, Klopp resigns at Liverpool, and they start talking to the bloke who's running Hartlepool. I honestly don't get it. I want someone to explain it to me.
It's because people put money on it, bookmakers. That's what it's down to. It's people who are prepared to put money on it, bookmakers, who rise up the odds, isn't it? Odds are only as good as the people who are putting the money on, unless they're getting information.
If I went down and put £10,000 on Steve Cottrell to be the next Bristol City manager, the odds would fly up and he'd be odds on favourite.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean. It'd be ridiculous, wouldn't it?
You don't want to take any notice of that.
Exactly. That's what I mean. So I don't, you're right. I don't think the Cowleys should be in the conversation. You need managers who've come in during a crisis. I mean, Nigel Pearson, I mean, he was unfortunate at getting a sack at Leicester, although the next bloke didn't do a bad job, did he?
Ranieri.
Here's another one to throw in. What about throwing, employed managers? What about Lee Bowyer? You know,
why are these names even being mentioned? Because this is a guy who has done a good job in difficult circumstances. But listen, we get told all the time by, you know, we're trying to be a Premier League football club, and we're getting a guy who did a good job at Lincoln, a guy who's done a half-decent job at Charlton. We shouldn't even be contemplating these people.
Not if we're going to take us to the next level. No, exactly. 100% right, Les. I'm only throwing these names in. Like I did with Benitez at the beginning, somebody said, am I on something tonight? No, I'm not. I'm just saying that was on the pretext of going big for an interim type appointment. No way.
But Dave, I think that's the route we will go down. Based on our track record, we are going to end up, I think, with a Cowley or that kind of, or a Bowyer in terms of that kind of stature.
So we're not going to be inspired whenever it's announced. We're not going to be inspired, are we?
I don't think so.
We always fail to deliver. We oversell and under deliver, like everything, isn't it, with Bristol City. It's just empty words. We can't trust those people at the top to make the decision based on our experience over the last few years. It just, you know, it sounds crazy, doesn't it?
Well, we can't trust Mark Ashton to do anything other than what seems right for him. And I think the long and the short of it, Steve has vested the decision process in his son and in Mark. Yeah, and look, there's some good things they've done. It's not all bad. And it's gone wrong. And this next appointment, yeah, if we get it wrong, it could have dire consequences because somebody's got to stop the rot. Never mind how long this is going
to
take.
So we don't want to rush things. When McGuinness was sacked, we brought O'Driscoll in the next day, didn't we? So who brought O'Driscoll in? So they'd obviously spoken to him, hadn't they? They hadn't just phoned him up straight after the game. They must have.
Lee Johnson got here pretty quick, didn't he?
Well, I think that was destiny, wasn't it? You know, that was always.
But O'Driscoll was appointed the following day, wasn't he? Or two days after McGuinness was sacked. So they obviously spoke to him before McGuinness was sacked and say, are you interested? I don't think they phoned him after the final whistle when we got hammered against Leicester in January 2013.
Yeah.
So did you want the job? No, I don't think he did.
Interestingly, somebody's put on OTIB, but when Tony Bloom, the Brighton chairman, was in this pickle, December 2014, he went and got Chris Hughton. It took him 9 days, brackets, two league games. That's what we need to be doing. 9 days, yeah? Not 2.5 weeks, right? And we are playing 2.5 weeks is another five league games. If we put in five more performances like the last two, we're going to be looking at 12 defeats in a row, aren't we? Anybody disagree with that?
No, I can't disagree with that. We want to know where the next corner is coming from. That's a worry.
Yeah. Guys, look, I think we're going to be back on Tuesday night. I think the conversation will continue. I would think it highly likely that we'll be talking about a victory, because Mr. Warnock will want to get one over on us. I think the key thing is, if Paul Cook came in tomorrow, I wonder what his starting lineup would be with the players that we have at our disposal now. And just final question to each of you, just off the top of your heads, or who do you think would be in a Paul Cook lineup that didn't start today? Never mind who's dropping, but I'll come to you first, Mark, right? Who would get in a Paul Cook lineup in his first game in charge, yeah, that isn't in there at the moment?
I think Backinson and Wells.
Okay, that's your two.
Yeah, I play those two.
Ian, out of those that started, well, who would be in a Paul Cook lineup that wasn't in the starting lineup today?
I just speculation, but I think you probably get Viner in a flat back four, alongside Callas, and I think you'd have Nash in midfield instead of Lansbury, Backinson in midfield, and possibly Palmer, because you need someone that can attack.
Yeah.
Not a lot of choice, but until the seven guys come back next month. And I think the one, if we wanted to play 3-5-2, the one that would make a massive, well, there's two that I think would make a massive difference. One's Liam Walsh and the other one's Nathan Baker.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
no,
it'd be quite
true.
Handy if I don't think Tommy Rowe's back until April.
No.
But Tommy Rowe or Jay De Silva. Jay De Silva should be back quicker than Tommy.
Yeah.
So let's get a proper left wing back in.
Yeah.
I mean, I think
that's it. So there'd be a few changes. There would be a few changes. Finally, Les, from you, I mean, what would your, you know, who would step in, the shape of the side and everything that you'd think? That's Paul Cook's first game. He doesn't know the players. He knows what he's seen on screen. But who would you change? Do you think the likely change?
I think Cook likes to play forward attacking football. So I think Backinson would come in because he's one of the few players who passes the ball forward. But in all honesty, I don't think it will be Paul Cook. It's all speculation, but I don't think.
So you think we're going to be underwhelmed? Okay, guys, it's what is it? The Riverside Tuesday night, 7 o'clock kickoff. We'll all be back for that.
It's either going to be Middles Rough, or I do like to be beside the Teesside.
I like that one, Mark. And your other half, we'll see how many likes that she's got on that little sampling piece on there. I pulled one sentence that you made, Les, that if I can bother to edit it and put it on there, it was very intellectual and what have you. So I'll pick that out, Les, as a preview for putting it up on the Twitter. But it's been great having you all. Thanks to all the people that have been listening. Yeah, as many in the studio, not so many unique listeners, but I think probably people have had enough. You know, it'll be interesting to see what the viewing figures have been on Robin's TV. But no, it's depressing. It seems like Groundhog Day after every single match, and I don't think I can face. I really don't think I can face two more weeks of wondering who the manager is going to be. I'd be happy with Paul Cook now, but as Les says, you know, probably ain't going to happen. But guys, enjoy the rest of your weekend, and we'll resume again on Tuesday night. Enjoy your weekend.
7 p.m. Cheers. Kickoff.
Yeah, 9 o'clock. Yeah, 9:30. We'll be doing it. 7 o'clock kickoff.
All right.
9:30 on the pod. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody.
God bless you, sir.
Cheers. Good night.
Bye bye.
Stay safe. Bye.